Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good day. This is Glenn, and today I'm going to be reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, dated Saturday, March 4th, 2023, front page. City staff unveils list of parks upgrades by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland is ready to move forward on park improvements. The Midland City Council received a briefing this week from City of Midland officials about what they could expect in the near future and what the hopes are for overall development of major parks inside the City of Midland park system. Those included Hogan Park, Ray's, Mashburn and Elms Park, Windlands Parks, Beale Park, and the Scarborough Sports Complex. The presentation this week referenced the 2020 Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Master Plan. Top needs listed included hike, bike, jogging trails, picnic shelters, nature areas, indoor recreation center, senior citizen center improvements, lighted outdoor basketball courts, public swimming pools, improved sports fields, indoor playgrounds, and botanic flower gardens. About Hogan Park, renovations identified included artificial turf baseball and softball fields, soccer fields, walking trails, splash pad, dog park, parking, and lighting. City officials provided the council an update that $4 million in hotel motel funds have been used to turf Bill Williams softball complex fields numbers 1 through 4 and another $5.5 million in certificates of obligation, council-approved debt, will be used to turf Bill Williams fields number 5 and number 6 and to put LED Musco lights around all 6 softball complex fields. Another $4.5 million from certificates of obligation will be used to install a hike bike trail, relocate the 2 dog parks at Hogan Park, to improve irrigation, and to install a softball complex playground, according to the City of Midland. The to-do list at Hogan Park in Northeast Midland also includes developing 4 to 8 new turf baseball fields with the main entrance and parking. Funding to be determined, the city presentation stated. About Reyes Mashburn Nelms Park. The City of Midland reported that a new playground, 2 new artificial turf, football, and soccer fields, and a new restroom and concession building at football soccer field have been taken care of or in the works at the East Midland Park. Officials also stated that the 2023 budget requests $7.9 million for a baseball quad, which is 4 fields, restroom and concession building, and parking. With future Hogan improvements, an imminent need is to provide at least 2 high school baseball fields, the city noted. This will result in additional funds needed of approximately $6.1 million. A parks renovations plan for Nelms showed 4 Little League baseball fields, 4 high school baseball fields, 4 T-ball fields, and 3 under-13 soccer fields. There are also proposed pavilions, a walking trail of $1.25 million, and proposed parking that will allow for around 862 total parking spaces. About Windlands Park. This major regional park is receiving the fewest renovations, soccer field irrigation improvements, and Musco lighting, as well as artificial turf for its 4 baseball fields and renovation of the water treatment building on the Central Midland Park site. The idea is to use Windlands for baseball currently taking place there and allowing for more land for soccer practices. But City of Midland officials stated they want to turn Beale Park in Southwest Midland into Midland Soccer Complex. About Beale Park, City of Midland officials stated that Midland Soccer Association officials are adding around 100 people a year to their soccer rosters to accommodate these teams and provide a complex for tournaments and leagues. City of Midland officials showed the Midland City Council a PowerPoint slide that showed Phase 1 improvements that included 3 under-13 fields, 5 under-11 fields, 8 under-9 fields, 29 under-7 and younger fields. Total improvements to Beale Park included 6 under-13 fields, 9 under-11 and 12 fields, 12 under-9 and 10 fields, 26 under-6, 7 and 8 fields, 6 under-5 fields, and 865 extra parking spots. City of Midland officials stated that 4 of the 8 baseball fields have artificial turf installed, that there are security cameras being installed, and skate park improvements such as water fountain benches and shade taking place. Future plans include a soccer complex development, indoor facility for basketball, volleyball, soccer, probable cost around $15 to $30 million, and amphitheater. About Scarborough Sports Complex, plans are for a shade structure over bleachers, a new restroom concession building, and property acquisition for two additional multi-purpose turf fields. Other improvements, a new bathhouse, concession, and restrooms at Doug Russell Aquatic Complex are funded in the 2023 budget. Haley and Butler Parks playgrounds are in the 2023 budget. Grasslands and Tumbleweed Parks playgrounds will be a budget request for fiscal year 2024. Solar pedestrian lighting, sidewalk improvements, tree planting. The Parks Department renovations will mean a need for a City of Midland field scheduler, according to City of Midland field scheduler, according to the City of Midland staff, and a maintenance crew at Hogan Park and Reyes, Mashburn, and Elms Parks, similar to a crew at the Scarborough Sports Complex. Previous Reporter Telegram articles showed that City of Midland officials have also talked about two new senior centers at a minimum of $10 million each. Sources of revenue identified for the improvements include the Oil and Gas Fund. City of Midland officials stated last month the Oil and Gas Fund had $22.407 million in it at the end of fiscal year 2022, and that around $10.39 million, a historically high number, is estimated for this fiscal year. Extra sales tax also will be used. The City of Midland also is raking in sales tax dollars around record levels to start the fiscal year. The $28.681 million through January is more than $5.8 million over budget and 25.7% higher than the pace set last year. Excess sales tax is pushed into the City of Midland's fund balance, our savings account. The city's rainy day fund is expected to have around $96.31 million at the end of fiscal year 2023, according to city estimates. Another pool of money is from the Scarborough Sports Complex Fund, which was created with extra sales tax revenue from the discontinued 4B tax. City officials told the Reporter Telegram last month the City of Midland has spent more than $12 million from that fund since 2017 and that there was $17.9 million at the end of fiscal year 2022. Once that fund runs out, city officials will have to use the general fund or hope there's enough hotel motel revenue available to help pay for the continued upgrades that take place at the Dual Stadium facility in West Midland. What to know about MISD bond planning meeting number one by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD held its first meeting of the 2023 bond planning committee on Thursday night at Midland High. More than 100 participants met the facilitators from N2Learning, learned about planning areas, the bond timeline and process, received presentations from Midland ISD staff, and went through an exercise about learning spaces. The following is information from the meeting. Important dates. Future meetings of the Midland ISD Bond Planning Committee are set for April 3rd at Legacy Freshman High School, April 20th at Midland Freshman High School, May 4th at Yarbrough Elementary, June 1st at Bunch Elementary, June 20th at A Place to Be Determined. Note: other community meetings are likely to take place between bond planning committee sessions. A recommendation is expected by July. The board must call a bond election for November by August, and the November election is set for November 7th. Planning committee charges. Review the recommendations made by the Long Range Facility Planning Committee as a result of its study of the comprehensive facilities assessment, demographic data, and anticipated academic programs. Review options for existing, renovated, and or new facilities and implications for student enrollment, innovative instructional programs, modern learning requirements, technology and educational specifications, staffing, operational effectiveness, and fiscal responsibility. Develop and recommend to the Midland ISD Board a bond plan that addresses student learning environments for the next 5 years and prepares the district for future enrollment growth, evolving instructional programs, and preventive maintenance. Planning areas. The following are planning areas for the Midland ISD Bond Planning Committee: schools and land, district facility renovations, repairs, interior and exterior, facility needs for growth and instructional programs, technology, innovative programs, and career and technical education, extra and co-curricular programs, safety and security, and transportation. Who were the facilitators? There will be Ken Helvey and Sherry Sides of N2Learning of Plano. Officials said N2Learning helped Plano ISD with its recent bond referendum, which resulted in voters approving $1.721 billion in school renovations and safety improvements and $174.45 million in instructional technology improvements. Two propositions of $150 million, which included a $130 million event center and safety and maintenance at stadiums, did not pass. Both Helvey and Sides mentioned their experience at Allen ISD, one of the largest high schools in the state. They also mentioned their experience with big high schools and big bond elections. What did participants do? After hearing presentations about the district, including goals, fast facts about MISD, demographics, teacher experience, areas of focus, discipline, initiative enrollment, and teaching and learning accomplishments, participants develop profiles of learning spaces. What learning spaces are needed to ensure that MISD students achieve our profile of a learner was asked during the presentation. Participants also were given articles to read about designing learner-centered spaces and things to look for in a student-centered learning environment. Industry Proactive About Pending Rules by Mella McEwen. Facing new regulations on everything from methane emissions from the Environmental Protection Agency to financial disclosure on environmental risks from the Securities and Exchange Commission, the energy industry is working to stay ahead of regulations. Steve Beach, Dean of the College of Business at the University of Texas Permian Basin, said during the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference this week, there are opportunities arising from efforts to improve environmental performance, listing opportunities in carbon capture and sequestration as an example. The challenge, he says, is that the public doesn't fully understand how the industry works. He asked about efforts to advocate for the industry and its environmental efforts. We try to continually educate Congress and regulators, Lee Fuller, Executive Vice President with the Independent Petroleum Association of America, replied. We make a tremendous effort to explain the industry, Fuller continued. There are ongoing discussions on methane, for example. Noting that methane emissions reduction was initially embraced across Europe, he said he wouldn't be surprised to see the focus turn to water and efforts to recycle produced water and even treat it for use outside the industry. Those efforts have drawn concern over the quality of the water and the chemicals in that water. Even drinking water is treated, Fuller said. There's always been a debate over standards for drinking water, and I expect that to be the challenge for beneficial reuse. He also expressed concern about regulatory efforts to change the way pension fund investments are managed and possibly steering them away from investments in the energy industry. Sam Sledge, Chief Executive Officer and Director of ProPetro Services, pointed out that the industry has worked on the E in ESG, Environmental, Social, and Governance, for decades. He told the gathering, ESG, at least in my career, has been outside-in pressure. Where we are is trying to recognize and be aware of that outside pressure. Given the subsector ProPetro operates in, Sledge said, the company tries to make sure it doesn't lose focus on what it's doing, on doing the right thing, and doing well by customers. There are efforts inside each component of ESG that we do because we believe it's the right thing to do, said Sledge. It's also beneficial to the bottom line, as he noted the company saved millions of dollars by switching from diesel to natural gas, cleaner than diesel, to fuel its operations. XRI Holdings prefers sustainability, said John Duran, the company's vice chairman. Duran said XRI's focus has evolved from its original goal of getting trucks off the road by moving water through pipelines to moving the industry away from fresh water to reusing recycled produced water. We always have to be vigilant, he said. We have to figure out how to make this commodity as inexpensive as it can be. Focus on the future and focus on recycling, telling the industry this is the way to go. It's critically important, he continued, for the industry to hold its head high over the services it provides the country and the world. It's also important to continue working on ways to make beneficial reuse of produced water outside the oil and gas industry happen sooner rather than later. Trevor Gleisner, Supervisor of Emissions Control at Diamondback Energy, said his company's work in the environmental arena is to do what's right for the communities where Diamondback operates. Compliance with regulations has changed dramatically, Gleisner said, pointing to continuous monitoring of production sites as an example. Diamondback, he said, has continuous monitoring on 90% of its facilities, roughly 160 batteries. Sledge commented that he's very encouraged that we have conferences and groups like this meeting to ensure we protect these resources through reuse and recycling and preserve fresh water. What is bank jugging? By Mercedes Cordero, Midland Reported Telegram. The Odessa Police Department reported Friday that they received two reports of bank jugging. According to the press release, bank jugging occurs when a suspect or suspects observe bank credit union customers entering and exiting the back, using the drive-thru or accessing the ATM, and then proceed to follow them, believing they are in possession of large amounts of cash, and look for an opportunity to burglarize their vehicles or rob them directly. Here are some tips from OPD to prevent you from becoming a victim of bank jugging. Be on the lookout for individuals backed into parking spaces who do not exit their vehicle to conduct business. Be vigilant when using ATMs, as they typically target individuals using ATMs. Also, individuals leaving the branch should exercise caution, as they could also be targeted. Be vigilant when arriving and departing. Be aware of your surroundings and don't leave your car or the building if you observe suspicious vehicles parked in or around the parking lot. Conceal your money before you leave the bank or credit union. Don't openly carry bank bags, envelopes, or coin boxes. Watch for people following you. Don't leave a bank bag, hidden or not, in your car unattended. Make banking the last stop of your errands. If you think you are being targeted or followed, authorities advise you to call 911 and keep the dispatcher on the line to describe your location, where you're headed, and keep driving until a marked police car finds you. Midland Police Department searches for robbery suspect by Mercedes Cordero. The Midland Police Department is seeking the public's help in identifying an armed robbery suspect. MPD officers responded Thursday at about 9:03 p.m. to Relax Massage located at 3306 North Midkiff Road. A male suspect entered the business, pointed a gun at a 47-year-old female employer, and demanded money, according to a press release from MPD. The employee gave the armed suspect money, the press release stated. The suspect, captured on surveillance footage, left on foot, walking northbound. He was wearing black clothing, a mask, and gloves. Anyone with information about the whereabouts of the suspect, call the Midland Police Department at 432-685-7108. The investigation is ongoing.
Pioneer ProPetro weigh-in on oil prices by Mella McEwen. That expected surge in oil demand from China appears to be on the horizon, as reports show China's economy is rebounding from the pandemic, raising concerns about supplies. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Stock Exchange rose 4 of 5 trading days, overcoming Monday's 64-cent decline. Prices recovered Tuesday by rising $1.37 and ended this week near $80, adding $1.52 to close at $79.68 Friday. That's well above last Friday's close of $76.32. The posted price closed at $76.16, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures also rose 4 of 5 trading days, starting the week jumping 18 cents. Prices ended the week over $3 per MCF, jumping 24.4 cents to close at $3,009 per MCF. Scott Sheffield, Chief Executive Officer at Pioneer Natural Resources, commented on prices during the company's fourth quarter and full year 2022 earnings called with analysts. "I'm still very optimistic we'll get back into the $90 to $100 range sometime earlier this summer as we get away from the $78 to $88 swing in Brent prices," he said. Commodity prices have impacted ProPetro services, financial goals, and performance. Matt Augustine, the company's director, corporate development, and investor relations, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. Both crude and natural gas prices reaching multi-year highs certainly helped. The company's margins reach post-COVID records, he said. "We and the industry alike have been keen on capital discipline the last 2 years. That plays into a stronger, more sustainable service industry," he said. ProPetro anticipates near-term volatility in commodity prices, but a strong dynamic long-term, he said. Oil prices are likely to remain suppressed even as global and national demand have rebounded, he added. "That combined with strong balance sheets and fiscal discipline, the new normal for both the exploration and production and the service industries make the market for ProPetro services tighter, which means it's more sustainable." Having ridden enough price cycles, he said service companies are unwilling to overbuild equipment, which means new equipment construction will be more strategic. ProPetro is only building replacement equipment, he said. China's economic rebound, the United Arab Emirates' denial it is considering leaving the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, combined with an Institute for Supply Management report indicating the U.S. remains strong gave a boost to prices, said Edward Moya, senior market analyst, Oenda. The oil market is starting to look tight again as China's economy rebounds and over the resilience of the U.S. service sector, he wrote in the company's daily e-newsletter. Oil looks like it might try to find a home above the $80 a barrel level, and that could happen next week if traders after the National Party Congress become impressed with China's growth strategy, he wrote.
What's Up with Midland by Morgan Taylor Thomas. The Blue Door has Jojo DeSalvo Saturday. Cafe at the Gardens is Market at the Gardens Saturday. The Destination has State Line Band Saturday. Karaoke Night, March 9th. Friday Night Live, Whiskey Cult, March 10th. Jet Black, Ronnie and the Redwoods on March 11th. Open Mic Night on March 16th. Friday Night Live, Tomas Christian, March 17th. Chase the Night, March 18th. Bring Your Own Blues, Open Blues Gym on March 23rd. At the Eccentric Brewing Company, McKenna Kosowski, March 8th. The Bearded Strangers, March 10th. The Bison Band, March 15th. St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. Singer-Songwriter Night, March 17th. Dave Martinez, March 18th. Shelton Rowling, March 22nd. Casey Greathouse, March 24th. Comedy Night, March 25th. Sam Choate, March 29th, and Lee Harmon, March 31st. At the Horseshoe, Monster Truck Wars, March 18th. Whiskey Myers, March 31st. I-20 Wildlife Preserve has a Wild Space Wellness on Saturday. La Hacienda Event Center has Riot on Saturday. Queensryche, March 12th. Chase Matthews in Kid G on March 30th. La Zenda Norteña, Los Ricaditos, La Zona, and Jerry Franco, March 31st. Micro Market, Low Street Market on Saturday. Midland Community Theater, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory on Saturday. Sense and Sensibility, March 24th through April 15th. Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Midland Farmers Market, Saturday and March 18th. The Tailgate, Modern Pop-Up Market on Saturday. William Clark Green Acoustic at March 11th. Sibley Nature Center has a camera club on Saturday. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center has Brad Lely, jazz saxophonist, Pops and Family Series on Saturday. Hairspray, March 6th. Midland Festival Ballet presents Feel the Energy, March 9th through 11th. John Crist, The Emotional Support Tour, March 12th. Our Planet Live in Concert, March 13th. Yamato, The Drummers of Japan. Hinotori, The Wings of Phoenix, March 16th. Zach Williams, March 17th. Chris D'Elia, March 24th. Maricela La Dama de Hierro, March 25th. High Tide, March 28th. Joanne Shaw Taylor, March 29th. Mike Massimino, UTPB Shepherd Leadership Institute Distinguished Lecture Series, March 30th. And Chad Prather and the Ragamuffins, March 31st. Community Roundup by Stuart Doreen. Great American Cleanup, Don't Mess with Texas Trash Off. Keep Midland Beautiful invites Midlanders together for one of the nation's largest cleanups. The Great American Cleanup, Don't Mess with Texas Trash Off. Co-sponsored by the Texas Department of Transportation, TxDOT. Keep America beautiful, keep Texas beautiful, and keep Midland beautiful. Participating groups will clean up their designated area anytime beginning March 1st through May 31st. The event is open to anyone interested in making Midland's public spaces litter-free. We have a lot of areas that need clean, so we need a lot of help, Doreen Womack, Executive Director of Keep Midland Beautiful, said. Every year, families, social clubs, business groups, neighborhoods, and Keep Texas Beautiful affiliates all over the state will join forces to pick up litter and beautify their local communities. Adopt-a-Highway groups oversee highway cleanup, while Keep Midland Beautiful volunteers focus on neighborhoods, city streets, and parks. Adopt-a-Spots and Vacant Lots. Registered participants will receive trash bags, glove, and a t-shirt if registered by March 17th. Register at thekeepmidlandbeautiful.org. United Supermarkets donates 1,000 pairs of socks to Salvation Army in Midland and Odessa. United Supermarkets donated 1,000 pairs of socks to the Salvation Army of Midland and the Salvation Army of Odessa, 500 pairs each, following its Pairs for Pairs initiative. For each purchase of Rainier Fruits pears and apples during the fall and winter months, a portion of the proceeds went to purchasing socks to donate to organizations that support the homeless community. Thanks to the guests of the United Family and Rainier Fruit, a total of 5,000 pairs of Hanes socks were donated to charitable organizations in Amarillo, Midland, Odessa, Lubbock, Abilene, and Wichita Falls. Community calendar, Midland County Republican Women's Monthly Meeting, 11:30 a.m., Wednesday, Midland Country Club. Springs Fest 23, celebrating the comeback of Comanche Springs in West Texas, March 11th, Fort Stockton Spring Break, March 13th through 17th. Movies in the Park with the Basin PBS, March 16th at Centennial Park. Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series event, an evening with Emmett Smith, 7 p.m., March 23rd at the Chapp Center in Midland College. UTPB Distinguished Lecture Series, March 30th at Wagner Royal Performing Arts Center. Basin PBS Main Street Live, May 19th, 203 North Main Street. Upcoming meetings, Midland Development Corporation, 10 a.m. Monday in the Chamber of Commerce Boardroom, 303 West Wall Street, Suite 200. The Planning and Zoning Commission, 3:30 p.m. Monday in the Council's Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Midland City Council, 9 a.m. Friday at the Beale Ranch House, 5200 West Wall Street. Midland ISD Bond Committee, the following is a list of bond planning committee meetings which are open to the public to attend. All meetings are scheduled to begin at 6 p.m. and future meeting dates are as follows. Legacy Freshman High School, April 3rd at 1400 East Oak Avenue at Midland Freshman High School. April 20th at 101 East Gist Avenue, Yarborough Elementary. May 4th at 6000 Riverfront Drive at Bunch Elementary. June 1st at 700 South Jackson Street. June 20th at a location to be determined. MISD's Bond Planning Committee website will be updated with more information as the process continues. You can find it at midlandisd.net/bond. Obituaries. Kent D. Stokes. Kent Duval Stokes was called home to be with Jesus on February 13, 2023. He was born in Norman, Oklahoma on August 5, 1960, to Dr. Ralph D. Stokes, entomology, and Roberta J. Stokes, who passed away in September 2016. Kent was an exemplary son who loved and honored his parents in all his ways. He is survived by his father, Ralph Stokes, and his wife, Carolyn, of Fort Collins, Colorado, his aunt, Joy Duval, of Naples, Florida, his loving wife, Lori Stokes, of Midland, Texas, and many friends. A memorial service will be held at One Hope Church of Christ, 2503 West Ohio in Midland, at 10 a.m. on March 11, 2023. In lieu of flowers, please consider making a memorial donation in Kent's name to either of the following organizations. Grace Community Fellowship of Midland at https://givebutter.com/stokes or www.2cor6.org/kentstokes. Obituaries. Nora Jeannie Prince, August 4th, 1943 to February 25th, 2023. Jeannie Prince, 79, passed away on February 25th, 2023, surrounded by family in Midland at her home. The family will receive friends on Friday, March 10th from 2 to 4 p.m. at First Methodist Church located at 300 North Main Street, Midland, Texas. Jeannie was born on August 4th, 1943 in Sidney, Nebraska. She met Gene Prince on a blind date in June 1960 and they married in September 1960. Jeannie is survived by her husband, Gene Prince, daughter Victoria Prince, son David Prince, daughter Cammy Davis, granddaughter Jamie Kite and Dustin Kite, and their children, Alvin, Alexander, and Austin, grandson Tyler Prince with Esmeralda Prince, and their children, Tyler Jr., Jeannie, and Ezekiel, granddaughter Ashlyn Permenter with Braden Permenter, Hannah Davis, and Gavin Davis. She is preceded in death by her mother, Ella Gerke, and great-grandson, Ledger Permenter. Jeannie will also be missed by siblings, many nieces and nephews, and countless friends. Prayers for the family at this time are appreciated. In lieu of flowers, the family welcomes donations to Friends of Libraries and Literacy, abbreviated as FOLL, at 2305 West Michigan Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Obituaries. Richard Cal Rick Holstead, husband, father, and friend to all who knew his fun-loving and gentle spirit. Richard Rick Cal Holstead passed away from natural causes on February 22, 2023. Richard Cal Holstead was born in Ballinger, Texas on March 18, 1950, to Dick and Genevieve Jenny Holstead, also of Ballinger. He He attended Ballinger Public Schools and graduated from Ballinger High School in 1968. Rick is survived by his wife of 45 years, Linda Holstead of Nacogdoches, son Stephen and his wife Susan of Ringgold, Louisiana, his grandchildren Randall C. Holstead and his wife Leslie of Graham, Texas, Nikki Petty and her husband Michael, also of Graham, Austin Holstead and his wife Rachel of Ringgold, Louisiana, and his sister Sherry Hubbard of Melbourne, Florida. He has six great-grandchildren and numerous nieces and nephews. His father and mother preceded him in death.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I will be reading the Odessa American from Saturday, March 4th, Section A. Assistant City Manager fired Thursday. Attorney says Smith asked Attorney General Rangers to investigate wrongdoing in city by Kim Smith. Assistant Odessa City Manager Aaron Smith was fired Thursday, and his attorney believes city officials were upset Smith had asked the Ector County District Attorney's Office, Texas Attorney General's Office, and the Texas Rangers to determine if Mayor Javier Hovan had illegally signed a contract with T2 Professional Consulting and if the city had violated the Texas Open Meetings Act. Aaron Smith, the whole time, has done what he thinks is right, and when he sees something that he thinks is wrong, he's not afraid to speak up. As a result of him doing the right thing, and reporting violations of law to law enforcement, his reward was to be fired by the City of Odessa, said Bobby Bland. Smith was hired by City Manager Michael Marrero and began his job December 1st, 2 weeks prior to Marrero himself being fired by a 5-2 Odessa City Council vote. Interim City Manager Agapito Bernal and Council Members Gilbert Vasquez, Chris Haney, Greg Connell, and Denise Swanner did not immediately respond to interview requests. Hovan said in email, "Typically, we don't answer personal issues. There is an active investigation into Mr. Smith by City of Odessa." Prior to joining the city, Smith was a senior managing director at Texas Tech University and had served as the city manager in White House, Texas, Ogallala, Nebraska, and Tulia, Texas. He has a bachelor's degree in history and political science and a master's degree in public administration from Texas Tech. His wife is an Odessa native and Permian high school graduate. Around the same time he was speaking with the AG's office and the Texas Rangers, Bland said Smith became aware of a city employee who may have engaged in unrelated criminal activity. Smith informed interim city manager Agapito Bernal and the Odessa Police Department about his concerns. Bland, who spent 15 years as the Ector County District Attorney, said it is his belief the city is using Smith's reporting of that suspected criminal activity as a pretext to fire him. On February 27th, current Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan informed the Texas Rangers he'd been asked by Smith and others to look into the T2 contract and potential Open Meetings Act violations and asked them to launch an investigation, Bland said. Shortly thereafter, Human Resource Director Charles Hurst brought Smith into his office to discuss the alleged criminal activity. Smith terminated the meeting because it had turned into an interrogation, Bland said. During that time, because he felt like they were going after him because of his complaints to the Attorney General, the District Attorney, and the Rangers, he wanted to stop it because, clearly, they were using this potentially as a pretext to terminate him, Bland said. He said, "I think you're coming after me because of the fact that I've reported this to law enforcement, and I want my lawyer here." Bland and interim Dan Jones set up a meeting for 2 p.m. Friday, March 3rd, to complete the interview, and Jones assured him Smith was not being investigated and his job was not in danger, Bland said. Friday's meeting was canceled on Wednesday with Jones, saying the circumstances had changed and they'd meet at the appropriate time, Bland said. Thursday, he was summoned in by the interim city manager and fired, given the reason that they were terminating him for interference with a very serious investigation and other related issues, Bland said. Because of the fact that he was fired after we reported a violation of the law and it began being investigated, they changed their tune and we will certainly be exploring all of our legal options. Hurst and Jones were present when Smith was fired, Bland said. Smith was then escorted out of the building. During a February 14th interview with the Odessa American, Hoven expressed concerns about how Smith came to join the city. I found out about it because somebody in the community said, I heard you got a new assistant city manager. I looked at him. Excuse me? He goes, yeah. He goes further. I asked, who is it? He goes, I'm not sure. It's just some guy. And I'm sitting there looking at him, and I have no freaking clue what they're talking about. I didn't even know there was a search going on, Hoven said. Was this sent out via an RFP? An RFQ? How was this done? Was this dude done by Indeed? You know, when I met Aaron, that one day when we were talking about interlocals and he stood up. Remember, he started dictating and I said, who are you? And he said, I'm Aaron Smith. When did you start? And he introduced himself as the assistant city manager. During the same February interview, Hoven also questioned why Smith was participating in discussions with the county about the formation of a joint airport zoning board instead of himself, the council, and Bernal. Council member Steve Thompson said it is not typical for the city council or mayor to get involved in the hiring of city staff, including assistant city managers. Although Smith was only with the city 3 months, Thompson said he had formed a favorable opinion of him. I saw him at a lot of meetings, he's very knowledgeable, and he had some very good ideas, Thompson said. According to an email obtained by the Odessa American, Marrero announced Smith's hiring as the Assistant City Manager of Community Services on November 15, 2022. The email was sent to all city employees, the mayor, and council members via cityall@odessatex.onmicrosoft.com and provides details about Smith's qualifications. Marrero also wrote, throughout his career, Aaron has established a reputation as a collaborative servant leader driven by challenges and committed to furthering standards of excellence. He and his staff built prosperous communities by launching an economic development corporation and completing capital improvement projects that addressed street, water, sewer, and stormwater infrastructure needs. Aaron and his teams also completed other transformative projects, such as downtown streetscapes, utilizing CDBG funds, and were creative in revitalizing a recreation center. City Council member Mark Mata said he was aware of Smith's termination, but said that since he doesn't get involved in the day-to-day operations, he wasn't clear on the exact reasons. I don't think it has to do with Michael Marrero hiring him. I would think it would probably be just because of, maybe, lack of productivity or some other HR issues. But, like I said, I don't have all of the information on that, Mata said. During a recent radio interview, Mata and Councilwoman Denise Swanner also expressed concern at the way Smith was hired, indicating they believe he was vetted by the Odessans for Ethical Leadership Group, but not them. Thompson said he and Councilman Gilbert Vasquez have been getting barraged with phone calls from people, many of whom felt Smith was the last voice of reason in management. This is causing hell at City Hall, Thompson said. Everybody at City Hall's nervous, I can tell you that. Heads keep rolling. Thompson said Bernal informed him of the termination Thursday, but he remains unclear on the reasoning. Thompson said he suspects Hoven and others at City Hall simply wanted to remove the last vestiges of the Marrero era. Thompson voted against Marrero's termination and that of city attorney Natasha Brooks, saying he didn't see any reason to fire them. Since Marrero and Brooks left the city in December, all of Odessa Fire Rescue's fire chiefs, assistant city manager Cindy Muncy, and downtown Odessa executive director Casey Hallmark have also left. In addition, utility director Tom Kerr suddenly announced his retirement in the middle of a city council work session, citing stress. He later said he intended to rescind that decision. Also, four of the city's six attorneys left following the firing of Brooks. "This is out of control. I don't know where we go. I wish I knew what to do, but I'm not that smart," Thompson said Friday. State of the District, Permian Strategic Partnership announces program help by Ruth Campbell. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray had a chance to trumpet many accomplishments, progress, and plans during his State of the District message Thursday night. The message, which included teachers and students, was held at the Odessa High School Performing Arts Center. Murray said ECISD has done what it couldn't, from providing high-speed, affordable broadband access to increasing kindergarten readiness and preparing students for the new world. He announced plans for middle school and elementary international baccalaureate programs. Odessa High School is the only IB program in the district. Murray also announced plans for a principal incentive allotment. Permian Strategic Partnership President and CEO Tracy Bentley announced a $100,000 infusion for a new teacher apprenticeship program in ECISD. Bentley said the future workforce is dependent on this pipeline that we strongly believe is going to come through CTE. Murray and Bentley said if the community prioritizes career and technical education, the Permian Strategic Partnership will close that gap. PSP works in 22 counties in West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. "You have the shining star of superintendents in our entire region," Bentley said. Murray said ECISD will be the first in the region to have a principal incentive allotment. "We are now in the development process of creating a principal incentive allotment. We'll be the first in the state to do that. We'll be expanding our leadership pipelines," Murray said. "Great principals lead great schools." Tonight, Murray said, is the story of a district that couldn't. It started with board goals and created a strategic plan aligned to those goals. He noted that for the first time in ECISD history, they are a B district under Texas Education Agency accountability standards. Half the schools received a grade of A or B from the state this year. 2 years ago, 16 schools were rated F. Murray said even TEA Commissioner Mike Morath remarked on the improvement in a video message. "You're seeing achievement gains that have never been achieved out in West Texas," Murray said. ECISD has 33,300 students and 4,200 staff members. It has 45 schools. 80% of the students are Hispanic, 14% are white, and 3% are other. 66% are economically disadvantaged. Starting teacher salaries in ECISD are $58,750 per year, compared to $44,000 in 2017. When Murray came to ECISD 3 years ago, the vacancy rate was 18%, and there were 356 teacher openings. In 2022, the vacancy rate was 1%. "Just 2 years ago," he said, "hourly employees made $10 an hour, and in 2022, it was $15 an hour. For the first time," he said, "the custodial department is 100% staffed." In 2022, 120 teachers earned $850,000 in teacher incentive allotments, and this year there are already 263 that have earned it. "We've made significant investments in our people," Murray said. The graduation rate is at 85.5%, the highest it has been in 20 years, and 65% are considered college, career, and military ready. That number was 56% in 2019. The 65% is above the regional score and equal to the state. Finally, our kids are just as competitive as their peers across the state of Texas, Murray said. In 2019, 19% of rising seniors were already considered college, career, and military ready. And in 2022, 38% were college, career, and military ready. Finally, our kids are right on par with the competition around our state. Editorial, Our View, Fairy Tale Time with Odessa's Mayor. The point? Hovan crew are bad for Odessa. His latest rant is full of misinformation and outright lies. If you've been reading the Odessa American's coverage of the city of Odessa on a regular basis, you've no doubt been struck by the fact Mayor Javier Hovan and sidekicks Mark Mata, Denise Swanner, Chris Haney, and Greg Connell routinely declined to respond to our questions. Well, this week, Hovan decided to attack the OA's coverage of City Hall in the Midland Reporter-Telegram, insinuating in an opinion piece, this newspaper is part of a liberal effort that is using a playbook to undermine and take down conservatives. We find it comical that he would pin this fiction on the pages of another city's newspaper, airing his grievances to an audience that really does not even comprise his voting constituency. That aside, think about his latest claims for a second. If we wanted to take down Hovan and his cronies, which also includes Ector County Republican Party Chairwoman Tisha Crow, would we consistently call, text, and email them seeking their point of view? Let's take it further. Hovan stated one of the plays in the so-called playbook is to pay someone to lie about them or to find someone desperate for attention. Essentially, he insinuates the OA is part of a larger liberal force that pays people to lie about him and his political allies. Please, if he is accusing this newspaper of paying people to lie about him and his supporters, he is telling a bald-faced lie himself. We do not pay anyone to be a source in a story, ever. If you're consistently reading the OA, you will already know all of our coverage is based on City Hall meetings and/or public documents received under the Texas Public Information Act. We didn't find former downtown Odessa Executive Director Casey Hallmark, who claimed at separate city council meetings Hovan and Haney bullied her, and for the record, her story has remained remarkably consistent. Not sure where Hovan arrives at the conclusion it has risen to incredible new heights of fabrication. We didn't find or pay anyone to tell us the city council voted 5-2 to fire city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks without explanation. It happened right in front of all of us, twice. In fact, it happened while being live streamed to anyone who wanted to watch it. We didn't pay anyone to tell us Hovan violated the city charter when he hired T2 Professional Consulting for $338,000 within hours of firing Marrero. It was right there in the city charter and contract to read. What was also readily available to everyone to read, the so-called credentials of T2's mental scientist. Hovan's terms, not ours, Hank Seitz. Go ahead, Google him. Oh, and if you can find a college that offers a mental scientist degree, please let us know. We also didn't need anyone to tell us that nearly the entire upper echelon of Odessa Fire Rescue has bailed out on the city, along with Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy, since Marrero was canned. Also, four of the city's six attorneys left following the firing of Brooks. All we had to do was file open records requests. We didn't pay a clearly frustrated Public Works Director, Tom Kerr, to suddenly retire in the middle of a city council meeting because of the undue stress placed on him by the mayor and some on the council. It wasn't us who were concerned the departures were part of a mass exodus either. That was City Council Member Steve Thompson, the only council member who can be counted on to answer the OA's and, by extension, Odessa voters' questions. Hovan also insinuated in his opinion piece that the OA was dispatching social media trolls to chum the online waters. We almost spit out our morning coffee reading that line. We almost lost it again when he accused us of being a social gossip rag. We're not the ones hiding behind false Facebook people with names like Josiah Vargas or Finnegan Lane. The OA does not fabricate stories or embellish narratives. We write the news of the day, good or bad. We tell readers what's happened at City Hall, and we reach out to everyone we can who might be able to explain why. We also publish editorials on various issues which represent our viewpoint, but we take great pains to keep our news coverage separate from our opinion pieces. We've been doing so since 1940, and any loyal reader of the OA knows we do it regardless of who's sitting on the dais in City Hall or Commissioner's Court. Hovan also falsely claims in his opinion piece that he, Mata, and Swanner scored solid victories over three incumbents in the 2020 election. Funny, we thought there had to be a runoff for all three, and the actual number of voters who elected Hovan is minuscule in comparison to the overall number of registered voters in the city, hardly a voter mandate. Oh, and by the way, we agree with Hovan that the $80,000 Christmas trees he complains about in his article were ugly, but the money used to purchase them was earmarked for tourism. It couldn't have been put toward firefighter wages, even if the council had wanted to do so. Hovan is simply trying to push the narrative that he and his crew gave local first responders their long-awaited raises. We suspect they are simply looking for allies. It can't be said enough. It is our job to report on the news of the day. We categorically deny we're angry with the city about our ongoing public records lawsuit with them, although it is definitely worth noting Hovan consistently lies when he says the city won that case. The city did not win. The judge in the case dismissed the lawsuit based on the city's claims that it eventually gave us the documents we sought. To be clear, the city only turned over the documents after we initiated legal action. The judge did not state the city was right to withhold the records in violation of Texas law or to redact them in the first place, and that is why we appealed the ruling. We want the Texas Court of Appeals to definitively say the city was in the wrong so they can't do it again. Hovan also criticized Texas Monthly for not mentioning local officials held a joint workshop recently. Should citizens be glad to see the City of Odessa, the Odessa Development Corporation, and Ector County working hand in hand? Absolutely. But for the record, it was County Judge Dustin Fawcett's idea. Again, that's not a false narrative or an attempt to bring conservatives down. It's just the truth. Speaking of the truth, Hovan recently told an OA reporter the reason our massive requests for public information didn't include many of Hovan's emails. The one thing that I was taught, you get an email, you destroy it, you don't keep anything, he said. This is what's being taught in every faction. Destroy this, 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 and this. You just delete. You keep nothing. By the way, that statement was recorded by the reporter, just in case Hovan wants to dispute that he ever said it. Public officials are required to keep their email dealing with public business, regardless of whether the email is from a government-issued email address or a private one. Folks, we are simply interested in the truth. It's what we are passionate about doing every day. Nay, it is what we're obligated to tell every day. And it's what we're going to continue to do every day. Obituaries. Milsey Isis King. Milsey Isis King gained her angel wings on February 26, 2023, in her home surrounded by her loved ones. Visitation will be at Frank Wilson Funeral Home on March 7, 2023 from 6 to 8 p.m. Funeral service will be March 8, 2023 at Faith Community Baptist Church at 10 a.m. She was born November 14, 1929 in Ventura, California to Charles Grover Nettles and May Van Doren Nettles. She was preceded in death by her parents, Charles and May Van Doren Nettles, her husband and love of her life, Wayne King, and sisters, Ibira Hawkins and Zona Day. She is survived by her sister, Tana Day, and children, Charlie Cheney, Debbie Claiborne, Malia Alexander, Wade Cheney, and Mickey Randy Worthington. She is also survived by 15 grandchildren, 22 great-grandchildren, and 6 great-great-grandchildren. Georgia Kelly. Georgia Kelly left us on February 23, 2023. Georgiana Lynn Kelly was born in Pampa, Texas on April 27, 1937. She was the first of 2 children born to G.C. and Evelyn Hubbard. Georgia was predeceased by her husband, Jay, parents G.C. and Evelyn Hubbard, and sister Jean Hubbard. She is survived by her children, Mike Kelly, Paul Kelly, and India Tucker. She also has 4 grandchildren, 8 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild. A graveside service was held on March 4, 2023 at Sunset Memorial Gardens.
Death notices. Odessa. John Joseph Blake, 53, of Odessa, died Monday, February 27th. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. March 6th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.